So, what makes you a Christian? And the answer is that you argue that Jesus' primary contribution was his ethics. Jesus taught an ethic that was dramatically superior to that of the society around him, not only pagan society, but proto-rabbinic society as well. And so you contrast the alleged legalism, aridity, dry legalism, of the, and for that matter, hypocrisy as well, of rabbinic Judaism with the teachings of Jesus. Now, this meant a hostile reading of rabbinic texts to the extent that these people read them at all, certainly a hostile depiction of what must be in them, along with somewhat blinkered reading of the Gospel or New Testament material to show it off in the most favorable possible light. Something parallel is happening among Reformed Jews. Just as the liberal Protestants I've talked about no longer believe classical Christian dogma, Reformed Jews no longer accept classical Jewish law. And so what is left for them as the central teaching of Judaism is, first of all, ethical monotheism, but in particular the ethical part, so that liberal Protestants and Reformed Jews are both saying that the particularistic elements of their religions, dogma in the Christian case, law in the Jewish case, are no longer binding. So what makes their religion special? Ethics. Do they disagree about the content of a proper ethic? Not really. So that you have here a kind of convergence of opinion about what matters in religion, except that one group, the Christians, claim this is the teaching of Jesus, in contrast with that of Judaism. And Reformed Jews say this is the teaching of the Hebrew prophets, not like the teaching of Jesus, which was overly exaggerated and whatnot. I don't have time to discuss this critique. And so you have a peculiar situation in which a new religious debate emerges that can actually become more acrimonious than anything that came before, because it's a battle about turf. It's a battle about what name you call this, more than it is a battle about content. Now, much more can be said about this entire matter. But there is a very interesting exchange regarding the nature of Jewish attitudes toward Jesus himself and his teaching, and Christian attitudes toward Talmudic materials and rabbinic Judaism in general, which is replete with very interesting ironies, but it's not for now. In the 20th century, two very, very different things happened, neither of which I can talk about in any detail at all. On the one hand, there is the revival of the old argumentation with a kind of new version of Christian missionizing of the sort that Rabbi Skobach deals with so well, and that is Jews for Jesus, Hebrew Christian, a whole variety of missionary activity, which really involves a recovery, a kind of renaissance, as it were, of the old scriptural arguments with little change. There needs to be a kind of old-fashioned Jewish response to that. This is a matter, obviously, of considerable importance. I would add, out of something that I have my own concerns with, as you know, that just as Christians in the 19th century committed what I guess one could call the unforced error — nobody absolutely forced them to do this — of saying that the Jews were right with respect to the scriptural passages, in the last 10 years, we have given up the Jewish argument denying the second coming. That is, denying that a person can come and announce that the redemption will take place in his generation and allow a messianic movement to arise centered on him and then die in an unredeemed world and still be the Messiah. The fact that Lubavitch Hasidim who believe this are treated as absolute Orthodox rabbis in perfectly good standing means that this classic Jewish argument that Jews have been making for a thousand years and more is, as best I can see, dead in the water. And we have killed it in the last decade, not because we thought about the Jewish-Christian debate, but for a whole bunch of other reasons that have nothing to do with it. So this is, you know, this is my one of my reasons for being so concerned about this matter. You know, it's simply no longer possible to say what Jews have said for the last thousand years and more, as long as people who believe this are treated as Orthodox rabbis in good standing. They shouldn't be, but in reality they are. So that's, in my opinion, a watershed if we allow this to continue. In the history of the Jewish-Christian debate. You know, Jews have now given up one of their central arguments through the ages, also for no reason. The other development that's taken place in the last, you know, half a century is the development of Jewish-Christian dialogue, which is the old debate in a new form, but a very new form, so that it's not seen as a debate at all. But it is rather an effort to understand the other religion within the context of friendship without a missionary intent at all. Now, this is a major subject unto itself, and much can be said about it, and in other forums I have. But this is not the place to pursue this point. Orthodox Jews in particular have been especially leery of engaging in theological interfaith dialogue because of concerns, I think just concerns about the demands or at least expectations for reciprocal concessions on each side. You know, if we Christians say that you are no longer, that you really are not responsible for the crucifixion, maybe you can say something nicer about Jesus than you've been saying up to now. Maybe he's the Messiah for the Gentiles at least. You know, you can give us that. Maybe you should say something about the issue of even incarnationist theology as not being so terrible. So this is a danger, and this is a case in which dialogue overlaps with the older debate. But there are dimensions of dialogue that do not overlap as sharp, as much with the older debate, and this is a whole issue for another time.
Thank you very much. We'll take a few questions. Maybe two, three questions I could ask. If you have a question, to come to the microphone. We'll take them at once. Keep them as questions, not as statements and comments. Keep them brief, and Dr. Berger will answer all of them at one time.
That's the same as one. Right. On the other hand, one might argue that three questions is the same as nine.
To what you're referring, I'm American, so I was very involved in the American presidential campaign and the role of religion, and even now there seems to be a whole groundswell of Jewish and observant Jewish commentators, radio personalities, and print commentators who are actually promoting wishing good Merry Christmas to Gentiles and to supporting Gentiles because I guess for strategic tactical reasons. And because we're in this essence in the same boat vis-a-vis the Muslim world and the anti-Christian world. So I wonder if you have any comments on that.
You said that you want to take questions together?
Yeah, if anybody else has a question, I'll have to. Yeah, okay, come to the mic, please. Okay, these two and the service like that, this will have to rest over. The two of you can ask questions, please.
You've dealt with the Jewish deconstruction of Christianity. Would you make a comment on Jewish deconstruction of Jewish texts, of ancient biblical texts?
Recently, I came across the Steinsaltz version of Gemara Sanhedrin, which appears to have restored certain passages that apparently had been censored from the original text, which provide descriptions of what appears to be the traditional Christian view of Jewish responsibility for the killing of Yeshu. How does that fit into what we believe in our dialogue with Christians, if it's going to be in a form of honesty and good faith?
Okay. three tiny questions. All right. Jewish support. Well, there's. I could try to evade answering the first one by saying that this is what Professor Novak is speaking about this afternoon. The title of the talk is Zionism and Christianity, Christian Zionist friend or foe. It's a very large and very important question. To compress a response into a few sentences is almost impossible, but I'll try to do it. There are Jews who are hostile to the kind of traditionalist Christians that I think you're asking about. You're not asking about the mainstream Protestants, although there are issues, obviously, with them of a different sort. In dealing with traditionalist Christians, evangelical Christians, fundamentalist Christians, whatever term you want to use, there are broadly differing views in the Jewish community. There are Jews of a liberal, religious, and political sort who dislike such people for every imaginable reason. They are politically on opposite sides of the spectrum, and Jews of this sort dislike fundamentalism in religion generally speaking, and certainly in Christianity, and emphasize the intent of these groups to convert Jews, and argue that their support for Israel is not enough to overcome all of these considerations, especially since the sorts of Jews I'm describing now consider the position of these evangelical groups regarding Israel as, this is not a fair formulation, but I'll say it because I don't have time to say it right, as too supportive of Israel. By which I really mean, you know, too supportive of what they see as right-wing positions in Israel. So for such Jews, even the support of Israel by such Christian groups is not all positive. And since everything else is negative, it's very easy to come out with a negative position regarding engaging them. Among Orthodox Jews, the situation is much more difficult, much more complicated. And there was a very interesting exchange on this issue with substantial articles in the most recent issue of Jewish Action, in which Rabbi Skolback participated. The Orthodox Orthodox Jews tends to be on a similar wavelength with some of these Christian groups on a number of issues, not all issues by any means, but on a number of issues regarding so-called the family values, a whole bunch of things, support for parochial schools by government and gay marriage and within constraints, but still to some degree abortion, pornography and so on. You know, this complex of so-called moral issues. In addition, Orthodox Jews tend to be especially concerned about Israel's fate, and there are a higher percentage of Orthodox Jews who identify with the sort of support for Israel that you have among these evangelical groups. At the same time, Orthodox Jews are I think, even more sensitive than other Jews to the dangers of missionizing, and these are real in dealing with groups of this sort. In that sort of environment, what has generally happened is that the crisis facing Israel has tended to outweigh the other concern in the minds of most Orthodox Jews. In essence, they consider this an issue of such urgency that they are willing to close at least one and a half eyes to the other concerns. What the right position on this is or isn't is not my opinion is not something that I could compress into a sentence or two anyway. So I have good reason to be able to avoid saying more than that. But I think that's the basic analytical answer. Now, the deconstruction of Jewish text versus the deconstruction of Christian text, I'm not completely sure what that means. I could have asked you to clarify, but then I would have to actually answer the question. The deconstruction has various meanings. There are many Jews who no longer have a traditionalist belief regarding the revelation of the Bible itself in a traditional sense, and therefore not bound by everything they find there. Consequently, whatever the texts mean, they aren't necessarily dogmatically binding anymore on Jews of this sort. Just as those who deconstructed Christian texts, if that's the right word, maybe what they did was construe them straightforwardly rather than deconstruct them. They just no longer felt bound by this. Now, there is a whole literary approach that we call deconstruction, and it has many, many forms. And this has been applied to the Hebrew Bible and to rabbinic literature as well. There are approaches of trying to interpret biblical texts in light of other biblical texts, which is usually called intertextuality. There have been efforts to take texts that seem to be very straightforward, such as a prohibition against homosexuality, and nonetheless try to direct them in a way that is more palatable to the reader. This kind of stuff is done across the board, usually among people who are themselves not fundamentalist believers. I don't know if what I said is at all relevant to the intent of the question, but I don't think I can say more right now. Now, with respect to Jews and the crucifixion, that was an issue that became particularly sensitive during the Passion affair. In which I was involved in several ways. If you want to see what I thought about that whole affair, although I didn't address this issue, I don't think at all. I wrote a substantial piece in the May issue of Commentary, which you can read online if you're interested in what I think about this. But with respect to the specific question about the passage in Sanhedrin and that says that the Jews executed Jesus. This page, by the way, according to a story in the Jewish Week that emerged during this Passion controversy, there is a very good Daf Yomi online site. I'm not a book in Daf Yomi online sites, but my impression is that this is really, really maybe the best one. And I have a certain connection to it since the person who does it is married to the daughter of my wife's first cousin. So this is Mishpoch. It's called Daf. The largest number of hits on any page of the Babylonian Talmud on that website is on that page in Sanhedrin, because Christians go to it, and more, and anti-Semites go to it, because the Jews here admit that they killed Jesus. Now, the issue here is, again, very, very complex, and I'll say just a few things. Number one, there were medieval Jews, under pressure to be sure, but I'm not certain that these were always insincere assertions. In some cases, I'm actually convinced they were sincere. Who asserted that the Jesus in these Talmudic passages is not the same person as the Christian Jesus. And the evidence for this was that there is a passage in the Talmud which says that this Jesus the Talmud talks about was a student of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Prachya, who lived too early to have been the teacher of the Christian Jesus. For medieval Jews, the alternatives, there was no alternative that some modern scholars, even some Orthodox modern scholars, would have to say that this particular story may not be historical. So their options were either to say that Christians don't know when the founder of their own religion lived, or to say that these were two people. And in the disputation of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, the 1240 Paris disputation, he famously said that these were different people. And when he was challenged vigorously, responded that not every Louis is the king of France. However, assuming that the rabbis who told this story were referring in their minds to the Christian Jesus, then which I think is probably the case. What is important to recognize is that the full resonance and power of the story of Jesus' crucifixion is entirely absent from these rabbinic accounts. The Jesus who is executed in the Talmud is not crucified. There is no crucifixion in Jewish law. But a very large percentage of the power to move and to anger in the narrative of the crucifixion is the flogging and the crucifixion itself, which is such a horrific mode of execution. None of that exists in the Talmudic account. Having said that, I nonetheless do have to grant the premise, the partly unspoken and partly spoken premise of the question, which is that Christians who are inclined to be hostile to Jews can use this material as evidence that the Jews had in fact been responsible for the crucifixion, something which I have to point out, medieval Jews readily, for the most part, agreed was the case, because they had these Talmudic stories. And most of them didn't think it was a different Jesus, although some did. There is a dispute in Jewish texts regarding the identity of that Jesus. Even if the identity of that Jesus, as is likely, was intended to be the Christian Jesus, the stories of the crucifixion and the Talmudic story hardly intersect. They do to some degree, but they hardly intersect, and consequently, the grounds for Jew hatred based on the gospel stories of what they did to Jesus are really largely absent if all you work with is the Talmudic material.